From Bureau's Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Benji. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Show, the radio show, and the last one of 2019. And has become a tradition on the Richie Allen Radio Show, we throw the phone and the Skype over to you on the final show of the year. So in a few minutes' time, in a very, very, very short few minutes' time, I will open the phone and the Skype channels, and I hope to hear from you today. Got a couple of Christmas tunes as well. A little bit more lighthearted than usual, or maybe not. It depends on what you want to talk about. How are you doing, by the way? Are you well? No theme tune today, just a bit of this. Just a bit of this. Welcome to the show. I'll give you the contact details after Shaky. Good to be with you today. Yeah, drives some people absolutely mad, that. Not me, though. In moderation, it's all right. And I've not been exposed to very much of it, it must be said. I've not been exposed to very much of it thus far this Christmas. Welcome to Monday's programme. Hope you're in good form. Hope you've had a nice weekend and you're not too stressed out with all the madness of the season, and that you're maintaining some level of normality in your life. Right, every year we've done this and it's generally worked okay. You can Skype the programme, which is the easiest, well, maybe not the easiest way, but it's certainly the cheapest way. You can Skype the programme. It's Chat with Richie. That's the handle. The Skype handle is Chat with Richie, all one word, Chat with Richie. And the phone number inside the UK is 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018 from inside the UK. And if you're outside the UK, it's very simple. It's +44 161 818 2018. But the meme is pinned to the top of the Facebook page for the program, and it's also pinned to the top of the Twitter thing, if you've not managed to write it down there. All right, yeah, I'm in good form, me. Had a busy morning. I didn't do a newspaper review this morning because I had a few things to do privately, you see. Or indoors, the oft-mentioned Caroline working today, so it gave me a chance to sneak back into town and to do one or two things. And I found it very quiet, actually. I found there wasn't a lot of footfall around the mid-morning there. Maybe it's because most people cleverly try and avoid doing anything after the 22nd, maybe, I don't know, but it was very quiet in there. The weather was okay, chucked it down very early this morning, but by the mid-morning it was nice, and yeah, it wasn't bad. I dreaded it, actually. I dreaded going in there, because, I don't know, it's for me it's a very negative thing to see people running around, harried, worried, serious looking, you know, arms full of bags and stuff. I don't like seeing that sort of thing, so I generally tend to stay away from the city centre. But it wasn't so bad this morning at all. Right, so I'll give you the contact details again. It is quiet today, and I thought it would be, in terms of I get to see how many people are listening at any one time, and it is a bit quieter, but then that's to be expected because of the time of the year. I've got one or two things to tell you anyway. I did get an email from Dean, which I didn't have a chance to reply to. That's Dean Smith, who runs a care home in Sheffield. And a few weeks ago, Dean read a brilliant and a very, very funny poem about Greta Thunberg. Not Thunberg, Thunberg. It was hilariously funny. And I did say to Dean, when the website is developed, it's under construction at the moment, my website, you see. The brilliant Hayden Hewitt is going to produce in the next few weeks before, I think before the end of January. No pressure on Hayden whatsoever to do that. But the website's going to be completely transformed. So I will keep my word. I'll put Dean's poem about Greta up there because it's funny. He's got a poem about Ken O'Keefe. I'm not sure about that. I think there's a bit of, not Dean, but I'll be accused of bullying Con, God love him. I had enough to say about him on Thursday, and I don't want to get into any of that today. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I do have a call. By the way, I generally, when we do the phone in, I generally give a priority to people who have never phoned in before. But today, it's a free-for-all. If you phoned in before and you've got something to say about anything, phone in. I have a caller standing by just before I get to him or her. It is Chat with Richie on Skype, all one word. There's no T in Richie. Chat with Richie. And it's 01618182018. That's the phone number in the UK. 01618182018. Plus 44161818218. The memes are pinned on the Twitter. Richie Allen Twitter and the Richie Allen Facebook as well. Let's see who we've got on the line. Caller, who do we have on the line? Welcome.
This is Paul Curtis from Coventry.
How you doing, Paul? Paul, I just saw a tweet from you just a few minutes ago saying that you might phone in. Welcome, my friend. Yeah. Nice to have you here. I know you from Twitter, of course, Paul, because you're a regular communicator with me. How are you keeping?
Grand. Finished work and all ready for the Christmas holidays.
Thank God. So you've got nothing. Well, you've got a few things to do, but you're work-wise, you're done now till after Christmas.
Work-wise, well, I do tours, obviously. So I got a tour on Boxing Day, but apart from that, I'm done. I've got one present looking at me left and right, and that's it. I'm done.
Good man. What does it mean to you, Paul, Christmas?
It's not the same. It's not like it used to be. It's just a commercial thing, isn't it? It's just a commercial operation for people to go out and spend loads of money that they haven't got. And, you know, family is the main thing, getting together with my family. I'm going to spend it with my brother, who's been in China for the last 7 years. So,
and he's back. He's home, Paul, isn't he?
Yeah, he's back permanently. Lovely. He was working for Jaguar Land Rover, and he's back permanently now. So we get time to, you know, sit with him and what have you.
I'm guessing China being so far. First, I was just going to say that China being so far away, it's not so easy to go and visit. So it's the first time in 7 years you've seen him. That's lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
So looking forward to that.
Yeah, and you've got to take it easy on Christmas Day, of course, if you're going to be driving on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
That's the curse.
It's a walking tour, Richie. It's a walking
tour. Oh, it's a walking tour, Paul. Oh, is that right, Paul? Yeah. Because I assumed, because I see you on Twitter as Paul Curtis Tours, I made the erroneous assumption that you had a coach company or something like that. Oh, walking tour. Yeah. Oh, well, you can have a few drinks on Christmas Day then, Paul. Why not? Why not, mate?
We may well do.
And you're in Coventry. So the independent media then, Paul, when I hear from people for the first time, I always ask them, it's a boring question, but what was your entry point to shows like this and other shows like this?
David Icke, through listening to David Icke, and then I came across you, and that was across YouTube, and I've probably been listening to you now for, I don't know, 15 months, 16 months. I just started to think something's not going on right here. We're just not being told something. Hang on a second, that doesn't seem right, you know, and I just started to question it. And then you get on YouTube and you start to find things and you start waking up.
Absolutely. Let me ask you about the election result, Paul. Were you a bit disappointed in it, or did you not care, or did you vote, or how did you?
I did vote, and was I disappointed? Yes, nationally, no, locally. Coventry's been a Labour stronghold for years and years and years, and one of the MPs is that Geoffrey Robinson.
Is that right?
He's just hit the mail yesterday quite badly. They're looking as if they're calling him a Russian spy now.
Yeah.
But the two of the voting areas down here were they were kept by 208 seats and 4 seats, and these are in the thousands, you know, like 20,000, and stayed up all night, of course. But it was interesting to see, and on Twitter today, they're all talking about, hang on a second, it might have been rigged, and right, there might have been some votes gone missing and all the rest of it, and there might have been voter fraud. So, you know, we shall see. We shall.
Do you know, I've often thought about voting, how we go about it, the methodology. I mean, when you have paper ballots, there's always the chance that ballots could be stuffed, right? But also, if it's done electronically completely, which is what's going to happen in the future, where you or I might walk into a booth, Paul, and there's a screen in front of us and we would touch the screen, you know, to say which candidate we wanted. That's wide open to be tampered with as well, isn't it? There's nothing you can trust, really.
That's been tampered with for years. If you look at the Simpsons,
Yeah.
If you look at the Simpsons, there's a Homer Simpson saying he wants to vote for Obama, and it's like, that's one vote for McCain.
Yeah.
He's not Obama, that's another vote for McCain.
That's right.
And it's yeah, that's been rigged. I like to go there with my black pen. No more my pencil, black marker, and put my mark down. Regardless of whether it makes any difference or not.
Fair enough, Paul. Tell me this, Paul. I can't remember off the top of my head. I should do. How did Coventry vote in the referendum? Did Coventry, as a city, vote to leave?
Yeah, the city voted to leave. 57% voted to leave.
Big vote, that.
And but Coventry split up into three parliamentary seats.
Right.
So the two sort of really strong-held Labour overwhelmingly voted to leave, and then the one sort of conservative side really voted to remain. But ultimately, it was a leave city. So, you know, when the politicians were ignoring the will of the people, it was like, this is going to come back and bite you. You think that you're guaranteed this safe Labour seat, and you're not. You know, you're not. And they ran a... It came from a majority of like 8,000 majority down to 208 and down to 400.
Yeah.
And, you know, I dare say if it might have been a summer election, they could now be looking at blue seats. But it seems, I don't know, it's hard because I don't like the Tories nationally, but I don't like Labour locally because they've got a 40 seat to 12 majority.
Yeah.
So anything they want to push through, they just push through. And Conservatives are just always overruled. So I'd like to see more of a split sort of hung council here locally. But nationally, I mean, I just think we're all screwed nationally. So
Yeah, we are.
He's going to do what he's going to do. But I was calling in, but I wonder if any of the other viewers have got this, about lights, street lights in the city. I was out with a councillor, I was out with a load of people walking around, and there's an area where there used to be 12 big, massive floodlights, and only two of them are working. And I said to the councillor, I says, yeah, mate, we need to get these lights working. All the kids were all running around stabbing each other. It's pitch black. We need to get the lights turned on. And he just laughed and he went, cutbacks. And they're talking in their budget, they've got to manage their budget. They're talking about reducing the lights at night down to 30% between the hours of 11 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
That's a really good question. I don't know, but I'm going to look into that. That's very interesting, that. Do you know, it makes sense. It's the sort of thing they would do. Let's cut back. Yeah. Let's save money on power. You know, save the environment. You know, climate change.
Not turn
the lights on. Of course, every villain in every major city is rubbing their hands.
Rubbing their hands with glee, they are. We're also one of these 5G test cities as well.
Yes, Coventry's a 5G test city. That's right, yeah, I knew that, yeah. And if you... So the transmitters must be there then. They must be visible now in certain parts of Coventry.
All over the city.
I tell you.
All of these car... If you notice on the floor, when you're walking down the street, where the car parking spaces are, there's all these little black discs. That have been put down on the roads. And so every one of these black discs is transmitting to somewhere, I'm a space, I'm free. And then on the ring road, there's all this digital sort of car parking spaces thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so everywhere there's a parking area in the city centre has got one of these black discs on the road now, you know, and they're transmitting whatever it is they're transmitting. That they're transmitting. So when you interviewed that man from down south, the 5G man, that was a really, really good interview.
John Kitson, yeah. That's right. They're very nervous about discussing 5G. Even the Greens organised the hustings there, which as you know, every candidate would be entitled to take the platform and have a few words, but they wouldn't allow him talk so long as he was going to talk about 5G. There's a great irony there, of course. The Green Party is supposed to be the party of the environment and safety, and yet they don't want to know about 5G. I'll tell you what we'll do, Paul. We'll put that out to the listeners, particularly the point you made about the lights being dimmed. That's very interesting, that. If anybody else has come across anything like that or heard anything along those lines, do get in touch with the programme. There's another caller just trying to get in, Paul, so I'll take that call. Very, I want to thank you for calling in, mate. Lovely to meet you. And Merry Christmas to you and yours, and good luck in the new year. All the best to you in the new year. I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. God bless.
Lovely, lovely dear. That's Paul Curtis there. Paul Curtis Tours in Coventry. And that means if you're in Coventry, you should be checking out Paul for a walking tour there in the Midlands. 21 minutes it is past the hour, past five. It's the 23rd of December 2019. This is the final Richie Allen radio show of the year. And as I do every year, I won't repeat this too many times, but every year we do this, we just throw the phone and the Skype line open. The Skype name is Chat with Richie. Chat with Richie is the Skype name. Couldn't be simpler. And the phone number is, if you're calling inside the UK, it's 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. And obviously then, if you're outside the UK, but I wouldn't recommend because it is very expensive, you know, it's +44 161 818 2018. You can bring up anything, you can talk about any subject, and I am fascinated by that. I'm going to look into that here in Madchester and in Salford, because of course I'm in Salford these days. Hi to Mark Wilde. How you doing, Mark? It was an honour to meet you, my friend. It was an honour to meet you at the Meet Space event here run by Graham and Hayden of Trigger Warning. David says, Christmas is a massive inconvenience and pain in the bottom. I don't believe in the little baby Jesus or that evergreens are magical. I'm pretty sure the sun isn't going to die and it will get brighter and warmer. Humbug, says David. And hi to Marie McVrian, who's a friend of ours, was listening in Corkig. I think she's in, or is it Kerry, Marie? It's been a long day. Nulla kind of did, she says to me. It's a Gurumila, us on Clore, Gok Blean. Thank you very much, Marie. Lovely to hear from you today. It really is. Right, we'll go back to the phone then. And like I said, it's open for him today. Whether you called in before, it doesn't matter. Call in again and we'll have a chat. Caller, you are live. Welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, it's Lee from Tring.
How you doing, Lee? Welcome to the show.
Yeah,
how are you?
It's nice to be for. I'm a little bit nervous, actually. I've listened to you for a long time, but never actually called before.
You're a gentleman, Lee, and you know you've got nothing to be nervous about. You're just going to have a chat with me. Lovely to hear from you. Where did you say you're calling from again? Did you say
Tring in Hertfordshire?
In Hertfordshire, right? Lovely.
Just north of Hemel Hempstead.
Looking forward to the Christmas. All prepared for it, or do you not care, Lee?
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose it's different for everybody, but. I'm going to have a bit of a quiet Christmas this year. I'm divorced, so I've been on my own with my cat for the last 9 years.
Right.
And she passed on this year, so it's going to be a bit quiet. But I'm a singer, so I'm out doing my thing tomorrow night, Christmas Eve. I'm doing a gig, and on Boxing Day, I'm working at a care home, doing a couple of hours singing to the old folks there. So, yeah, I'll be busy.
Lovely, Lee. Sounds lovely. Hey, do you know, you mentioned your cat passing away this year. I bumped into a lovely lady whom I know called Stella in the park yesterday. It's Stella without the T, Stella. Lovely lady in her late 70s. And her dog, or her 13-year-old dog, passed away during the week and she's absolutely devastated. People who don't have animals in their lives, they don't understand, do they, when we get upset about it? I'm sure when your cat passed away, it was absolutely, it floored you, I'm guessing. I don't want to make you upset now. I don't want to make you upset,
yeah,
but it's a terrible thing, isn't it?
It's no different to humans,
yeah.
To me. I mean, if you're that close to an animal, it's no different. And I spent, as I say, 17 years with her, the last sort of 9 or 10 years on my own with her. So, yeah, she was a beautiful little cat and so good-natured. And, I do miss her. But, so she was nearly 18, so she'd had a fairly good run.
She had a good innings, didn't she? And the obvious question is then, do you think... Well, I'll go to a rescue centre now, or I'll bring another cat into my life, or is it a bit too early? Because sometimes it's a bit early for people.
Yeah, well, I think, to be honest, it's hit me so hard that I wouldn't want it happening to me again. So I don't think I will. The only way I'd ever take another animal is if there was one in, you know, that was somebody said, we need a home for this animal. I wouldn't go actually purposely down to kennels or anything to look for one, because trouble is, Richie, I'd want them all, you know.
You would, wouldn't you? Yeah, you'd want to bring them all.
Yeah, you look at their little faces and you just can't pick. So luckily she picked my wife. She rubbed against her leg. It was raining at the time. I remember when we got her, it was from a kennels, and she chose my wife. So that was it. Out of three cats, and my wife said, "Oh, we'll have this one. She's chosen me." So no, I couldn't. I think I've got plenty of animals out in the garden. I sort of spend a lot of time out in the garden now. So I've got the birds to feed and everything. No, but I don't want to sort of come across as...
No, not at all. You don't. That's my fault for dwelling on it. No, it's just because I, this week, coming into contact with somebody who'd lost their dog. I like to make the point every now and then to people who are a bit bemused by us animal lovers that they are just like people to us. Of course, they're great companions. Just before you come on to say what you came on to say, love the idea of you singing for some of our elderly neighbours on over the Christmas on Boxing Day. It's a lovely thing, that, Lee. Must be great, that.
Oh, I love doing it. I mean, I have to charge for it because it's my living, really, now. Yeah. But, I go in there and, I love the people. Old people, I think you've mentioned this before, we can learn a lot from the older generation. So I sit there chatting to them and, it's great. I love it. I love to brighten them up as well. They always seem to... cheer up when I come in and do my songs. So I enjoy it.
You sound lovely. You sound like you're the right man for the job. So tell us then. It's a mad year. Looking at stories today in the press, racism, all sorts of mad stuff. There's obviously something you wanted to say. So what did you want to say when you came on? Yeah,
a couple of things, Richie. One of them was a Merry Christmas to basically not just yourself, but all the genuine alternative presenters out there, such as you, David Icke, and a few others. I mean, researchers as well. Basically to say Merry Christmas to you. I don't know if you realise how much happiness you bring to people, because, to be honest, I don't have any anything to do with the TV mainstream, apart from your shows where I hear what you're talking about on there. So really just wanted to wish everybody in your line of work
a very
Merry Christmas. And I also mentioned a couple of other things. One thing is my next-door neighbour, I was out there, she's an Irish lady, and she's out Christmas Day in London handing out gifts and money and vouchers to homeless people. That's how she's spending her Christmas Day. She's taking sandwiches for lunch. I thought it was fantastic. I gave her a donation sort of to hand out, very small, only 20 quid, but, I mean, I must admit, I'm not, strapped for cash myself, but... I just admire her so much. She's just out there on Christmas Day doing that, and it reminded me of when you went out with David Icke, when they wouldn't let him participate in a fundraising for the homeless in Manchester, and you and he went out to the doorways and handing out the cash that you'd already made, because they wouldn't accept that, would they, the charity?
That's right. That was David and Jamie, I think. That wasn't me. It was David and Jamie.
Well, I just remembered that.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah, it was a lovely thing. Yeah.
I reminded her of that, you know.
Yeah, lovely thing, that. Lovely of you and lovely of your neighbour. It's a lovely thing to do, that, isn't it? Isn't that funny?
I just admire. To me, it's like saintly behaviour. It's fantastic to go out there Christmas Day and spend our whole Christmas Day doing that. And there was another, just a quick thing I wanted to mention is, I'm a believer in reincarnation, and I don't know if you've ever thought of having anybody on, a researcher on the programme, about reincarnation, because it's a massive subject, and I know you get a lot of speculation about it, but there are some researchers, one of them's dead, one of them's Dr. Ian Stevenson, who wrote the definitive book, Children Who Remember Past Lives, and he had a couple of he's got a protege, Jim Tucker, who's still doing it, an American, and he's brought out books, and it's also Alanda Harrelson as well, an ex-colleague of his. Now these three guys really researched this in places like Sri Lanka, where they believe more in reincarnation, they're more accepting of it. And I just wondered if you would consider having anybody on about subjects.
I love these subjects. My big problem is, I've said this once or twice before, not having the contacts in those fields of research, I'm a bit flummoxed at times. I depend on listeners like yourself, so your best bet is to drop me an email and mention a couple of people, and I guarantee you I will contact those people and invite them on. No two ways about it. I'm very interested in that subject as well.
I'll try and contact yourself and perhaps Jim Tucker. My friend, it's funny, I won't take up much more of your time.
Oh, you're grand.
A friend of mine, he doesn't know what to believe about the afterlife. Well, he didn't. And I said, you've got to get a book on reincarnation. I told him about two or three books, and he read one recently, and he said, I believe now. Because the thing is, Richie, is they've done proper studies I mean, these children have remembered past lives, and there's proof, you know. To me, there's definitive.
Well, we've lost Lee there a moment. Oh, you're back. You're back. Thank God.
It's life-changing.
Sorry, we lost you just for a second. No, it's not your fault. No, you dropped out for a second. I thought the call was gone. Listen, I'm fascinated by that subject, and I'll be delighted to get into it. One of the things that really bugs me, and it lets me down, it lets the program down. The show was always meant to be hard news analysis, but with plenty of esoteric research and discussion in there as well. And in the last year or so, the esoteric discussions are not anywhere near as much as I'd like them to be, or we don't do enough of them. And I do mean that. So I'm going to address that in 2020, and that's a promise. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we have as much of the metaphysical, as much of the spiritual, as we do talking about the crazy stuff. I don't know, it might do me the world of good. By the way, Marie is in Cork. She says she's a Jackeen, Marie. And she says, Richie, to Lee, she says, my dog Dom died back in March. I said I couldn't face going through it again, but I adopted Paddy in May, and I'm so glad I did. Lee might feel up to it in a few months' time. You might, absolutely, and you might not, Lee. But
yeah, we'll see. As she says, there comes a time when things get easier. It hasn't happened to me quite yet. I still kiss her picture every day.
Yeah, do you?
So, her photo. There will come a time, I know, when it will get a lot easier. So thanks very much for the late. What was her name again, Richie?
Marie. She's in Cork.
Marie. Thanks very much. No, as I say, I'll let you go because you're a busy man. You've got a fantastic show. It's cheering me up. So thank you very much again. And I really appreciate all you're doing. I'm sure everybody else does.
I'm glad to meet you, Lee. I'm really glad I met you today, mate. Thanks so much for coming on the programme. And Merry Christmas to you. And have a brilliant gig on Boxing Day with the seniors. Oh, I'm sure it'll be fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Many happy returns. Thanks so much, Lee. How lovely is Lee in Hertfordshire there? Lovely stuff. Top man is Lee there. It's hard, pets, isn't it? You could hear the emotion in his voice there. I didn't want to make him upset. We've got that in the next few years. Jazz is approaching 12 now, and she's moving well, and she's good, and she's fit and all that. But you know, unless something happens to me, you know you're going to have to deal with that. And that's what you kind of take on. I've given you the contact details. Chat with Richie on Skype, and it's 01618182018. And I think I have Cliff and Sue, or Sue or Cliff, on Skype now, I think. Am I right?
Yeah, it's Cliff, Richie.
How you doing, Cliff? Welcome back. How are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm really good, mate. I just thought I'd phone up and just really... we'll have a chat about various things, if that's okay.
But of course.
I thought I'd just wish you happy Christmas and a very prosperous new year to you and the future Mrs. Allen. It's about time you made an honest woman out of
it. Isn't it? Yeah, I know. It might be the longest engagement, at least in this country. We got engaged in 2008 when we lived in Spain. And I didn't have much money at the time. I bought a terrible diamond ring. She still wears it and she won't part with it. And I said, look, I might in 6 or 8 months or in a year's time, I might buy you a nicer diamond. We're not materialistic people at all, and she's not, but she won't hear of it. She loves it. I mean, it's a bog standard thing I bought back in 2000. I didn't have any, had no money at the time. So that's right. I will, I might make an honest woman of her in the next 5 or 10 years. Cliff, listen, many happy returns to you too, by the way, and your family. And thanks for listening to the program. So the floor is yours, my friend. You can take it over there, Cliff, and off you go.
Yeah, so I was just going to talk about really the Great British Mortgage Swindle.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm involved with submitting claims for that because I want to see the banks get a kick in, to be honest with you, talking straight, and to stop the corruption. So, that they've reached their 500th claim submission, and they're ready to go basically in the new year.
Brilliant.
So,
give our listeners, synopsize what you're doing for our listeners who might never have heard of this. Tell them what you're doing and why.
Right. Okay. So, the banks, I'll try and make it as succinct as I can. So, the banks have basically been conning us all for generations. And when you go into a bank to borrow money for a mortgage, say in this case, you think that they're getting money out of the vault when you sign on the dotted to say you want to borrow the money. But actually, when you sign on the dotted, the value's in what you're signing. Under the Bills of Exchange Act 1882, you're essentially making your own promissory note. And so the value's in what you sign, and the bank give the illusion that they're lending you money. And then from that, they keep that illusion going by charging you interest on something that you made in the first place. And then they sell that on to some of their corporate mates. And so they get money for something that they never had any risk in the first place.
That's right.
And then they insure it so that if you stop paying, and that they get paid out, I think it's after three instances of not being able to pay the mortgage yourselves, ever took it out.
If you miss three payments, Cliff, they can then make a claim with their insurer. Is that right?
That's it. That's
wow.
it. So then they get paid out in full for the whole amount that they allegedly lent to you.
What a scam!
And so it's essentially that when they sell it on for at least 90% of the amount that they say lent you. So if someone defaulted on the mortgage payments up to, three times, they'd actually get the insurance money. They've already got in 90% of what you allegedly borrowed anyway from selling it on to one of their corporate mates. So they've got at least 190% of the value that you originally signed on the dotted for, and they'll come after you to kick you out and take possession of the asset, of the property.
It's the biggest scam in the world. And of late, and people whom I know you're very familiar with, Michael Bernicia was on the programme talking about this. Michael was on RT. They've made a documentary about it, haven't they? Talking about this, I know you're involved. So it is, it's the biggest scam in the world. It's, you've brilliantly, succinctly described it, by the way. Congratulations. Nobody could be under any illusions as to what's going on. Brilliantly and very succinctly described. That's what it is. And yet, I reckon one in every 500,000 people in the country might know about it.
Yes. So that's part of really what I was going to speak about.
Yeah.
So, I've been trying to get people involved. And it's, I've told that many people. And there's only two other sets of people I've managed to get involved to actually think about doing it. It's that, I don't know if it's the right phrase is cognitive dissonance I'm not sure. But you just can't get people to kind of take it on. I mean, and that's really the whole reason for the call is to, how do you get through to people? I mean, it's the same with anything that's going on at the moment, Mark Windows, we ran a talk for Mark and Piers locally, and we put out somewhere around 12,000 leaflets and maybe a bit more than that, actually. And it's 14,000, sorry.
How did the event go last week? You had Mark last week, didn't you? Because you mentioned
that. It was at the end of November 30th. Yeah, I mean, they were on top form, absolute top form, the pair of them. And it was a great talk. But to get numbers there is really difficult. Despite all the numbers of leaflets that went out, people take no notice, and that's the thing. And when you start looking at why is that? Well, they've got it kind of sewn up in the way that you're allowed to promote stuff. Obviously, people see the mainstream media on the whole as being truthful, and we all know it's not. And so anything different to that, people immediately reject.
And it's worse than that too, Cliff, because people like Mark and Piers, they've got very, they've got substantial followings. They've got substantial audiences. They do. And the killer is because of the, let's say what it is now, it's the hegemony of Facebook and Twitter. They can now, you look and you think, God, I've got 30 or 40,000 followers, or I've got 50,000. And they just make a couple of tweaks to the algorithms, and less than a fraction of the people who follow you, who chose to follow you, will actually see what it is you're doing. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's just rotten. I don't know what to say about it. Do you know, somebody said to me about 2 years ago, in fact, it was somebody at one of the local universities. They wanted to do a quick interview with me about the independent media. And they said if there was one fact that you could alert everybody in the country to overnight, what would it be? And I said what you said, Cliff. I said I would give everybody the awareness of how money is created by banks. Because I think Ford said, the great automobile Ford, didn't he? Henry Ford, didn't he say if people knew, I'm paraphrasing here, if they knew how the money system worked, he said there'd be riots, or did he say the government would come down or something like that? Yeah, I believe that too.
Yeah, so I say it's we tried to get as many people at that talk as possible, and we got numbers there, but not as many as we wanted, to say the least. So it's how do you get the word out? That's the big question. So I think that what you have to do is do a little bit of what Extinction Rebellion are doing, and that is don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And yeah. And just start putting stuff out there.
Hey, Cliff, here's a thought. You know, it's funny because as I was coming up the stairs to the studio, I caught Sky are doing some review program all week long. They're reviewing different times of the news year. I think today they were looking back to the summer, and they had some Extinction Rebellion guy on, and he was saying, oh, this is the era now of non-violent civil disobedience. It's the only way to change things. And I was thinking, I thought, okay, now I believe he's wrong. I don't believe climate change is happening, not to the degree they think it's happening. So he says that's the way to go. And I thought, yeah, it's easy for you to say, mate. They'll allow you to do whatever you want. But if a few thousand of us take to London and say we're going to occupy London or stop the traffic on London Bridge because of the financial system, they'll beat the living shit out of us, Cliff.
Absolutely right. You know? It's very difficult to know what to do.
Yeah.
But I think what you have to do, everyone, is grow a pair of balls and just say, oh, excuse the language, fuck it.
Yeah.
You just go for it.
Do you know what, Cliff? I wouldn't mind them beating the bejesus out of us if at least the media was to cover it. But not only would you go down to London with a couple of thousand, justifiable protest against the financial system, not only would you get your head kicked in, but the media wouldn't cover it, so nobody would know. That's how mendacious the whole thing is.
Yeah.
I don't want to be negative today, but that's just the way. We've got to find a way to overcome that.
Absolutely right, and the only way I can think of doing it, and I'm just an ordinary fella trying to think how to get the word out. You've got to do stuff yourself. Just stick banners out there, or whatever, wherever, and do what they do. Extinction Rebellion, or as you rightly say, they're allowed to get away with it. I know that they're basically working for the government, aren't they?
Yeah.
The government are wanting this to happen and allowing it, so they've got the excuse to bring in the people's assemblies and allow them to have some influence on future decisions. Yeah, but it's actually the government's decisions. We're all being conned. I think we just have to get the word out in whichever way we can. But it's difficult because people are so soaked into the system. So into what they're told is the truth. It's a very, very difficult nut to crack. It really is. As I'm now learning, it's very, very difficult. What the answers are, Richie, I don't know. But you just have to keep knocking on the door, don't you?
Yeah, and you're up for the fight, Cliff. It's good, mate. It's good that there are people like you out there getting Mark and Sandy and Piers and getting others to come and talk to people. I wouldn't be disheartened. If you get 20 people in a room, it's a great start. You might have had 50, you might have had 100. It's a really good thing to do. I'm looking at doing a little bit of public speaking next year, not because I know anything about anything. I'm no researcher, but my area of expertise is the media. And commenting on the media and how it operates is something I know a little bit more than most about, having worked at every level of it. And I'm taking a show on the road for maybe 3 or 4 dates next year, a couple of theatres, and I'm going to do that in a funny but informative way, and see what sort of reaction it gets, But I worry about, trying to get venues, and venues then getting contacted by people. Oh, you shouldn't host this guy. This guy is a friend with this guy, and this guy spoke to this guy, and he's had right wing people on, and he's had Holocaust deniers on, and it's mad. Like, you're constantly kind of you know, you're constantly battling through that stuff. I mean, David Icke has had it for years, you know. He books a venue, the insurance is covered, all the work is done. And then at the last minute, then the venue says, oh, we don't want any hassle, so we're going to cancel you. And I mean, I'll never forget in Manchester 2.5 years ago when Old Trafford kicked us out on the day of the event. On the day. And it's only because Paul Ripley from Fab Radio is an amazing guy, is a friend of mine, that we were able to get the Bowlers Exhibition Centre at the last minute to do the thing. This is the sort of stuff we're going to be coming up against. But you sound optimistic, Cliff, and I'm glad, mate. You give me a bit of a fillip, you know.
Well, I can't give up, you know, and I won't give up, because they're, you know, they've conned, you know, all of us, you know, they're not just doing it over here, they're doing it all around the world, you know, in the Republic of Ireland as well, everywhere. They're conning every single one of us, and they've done it for generations, and they'll continue to do it to future generations. So I can't sit back, Richie.
No,
I just can't sit back.
You're a top man,
I have to try.
I wish everybody had some of what you have, Cliff, and then we wouldn't be even having this conversation. Mate, give Sue and everybody who knows you our best regards for Christmas. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for supporting the radio show and being a champion of it. I really appreciate that as well. It's nice to get a chance to thank you personally. And you know we'll be returning to the creation of money again in the new year. There's no two ways about that, Cliff.
Yeah, and let's hope, fingers crossed, that Michael O'Bernicia and company, you know, when it goes to the High Court, you never know. You know, with the judge on the day, unless he or she's been told from above, you better not do that. You just never know if you're going to get a judge there that's going to think, well, no, I can't really do this anymore. You know, I need to actually make the right decision, you know.
Imagine we're even saying that. Imagine you're saying that you hope that you get a judge who will apply the law. Imagine, this is the state of things. You know, it's disgusting, isn't it? You have to hope that you get a judge who will do the right thing. Oh, Jesus. We're off, I think, next to Drogheda, I think, in Ireland. Cliff, mate, Merry Christmas, and thanks for being there.
You too, Richie. All the best to you and Caroline, and have a great Christmas and a fantastic New Year. And thank you for what you do.
Not at all. Thanks so much, Cliff. Many happy returns. The lovely Cliff Moore there on the line to us from his home. Gotten to know Cliff on social media over the years, and he was on one of the phone-ins earlier this year as well. Now I'm going to Jerry, and after we chat with Jerry, there was a mobile phone call trying to get in there and then it stopped, but we'll come back to it. It's 12 minutes to the top of the hour. It's the 23rd of December 2019. It's the last Richie Allen radio show of the year. I'll be back sooner than you know, because you know what Christmas is like. Before you know it, you've got New Year's Eve. Then New Year's Day then is a holiday. That's next Wednesday. That's a week on Wednesday. And I'm back that weekend with Sunday View, so it'll fly by. It'll fly by. Jerry, Dia Gwit, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Richie.
Great to have you on, mate. Lovely to be speaking to you. I'm glad I got you on. Are you looking forward to are you looking forward to the Christmas, Jerry? Are you looking forward to a few days off, or do you not care?
Richie, I'm retired, mate.
You're retired, so yeah, every day is Christmas.
I'm a few weeks older than your mate David.
Oh, are you? All right, okay, right. You're not that old.
I was born on the spring equinox that year, 52. Good year for babies.
52 was a good year, yeah.
I remember David from when he was a footballer.
On goal for who now? I'll test your knowledge now. Who did he play for? Go on.
Coventry, Hereford.
Good man.
I don't know.
He was on Arsenal's books very early on when he was a youngster. He was on the books of Arsenal.
I was at the time. I was convoluted. I was at a Catholic school in Portsmouth, and a boarder. It was a day school, but it was a direct grant. And they used to take 30 or 40 people who couldn't get there every day. Anyway, I used to go and see Pompey on a Saturday afternoon just to break the monotony.
Is that right?
Anyway.
So you have the floor, my friend. There's obviously something you'd like to talk about, so it's over to you.
I've listened to you right from the beginning, mate. From Touristy to Turd.
Thanks. Did you? Thursday the 3rd. I thought it was a Tuesday.
Thursday the
3rd. Thursday the 3rd, yeah.
Your pronunciation is a bit better these days.
Just
yeah, anyway, yeah, it always made me laugh, though, Thursday the 3rd. Firstly, I've got a little criticism for you.
Go ahead. I can take the criticism. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, well, I've heard you. It's about Private Eye, the magazine.
Yes.
I've sent you an email once. I think you were talking to David Icke, and I just read the current copy of I've been a subscription. I had a subscription for 50 years. And it's the only home of real journalism. It's where journalists go who can't get their stories in the mainstream. And it's packed with and they cover everything. Everything from paedophilia to tax havens to everything, you know, from Leveson to revolving doors, politicians, even right back to Deep Cut Barracks. They're still going on about that.
Yeah.
And last week, one of the last things you said was about Carillion. They would have told you about Carillion and what's his name? Alistair. No, what was his name? The
George Osborne.
Yeah, they would have told you about George Osborne weeks before you had to do your research. They knew something was going down. They knew George Osborne had gone there and what was happening at Carillion before it went down. It's a very, very good publication.
Ian Hislop, of course, the people who watch Have I Got News For You will probably know Hislop. He's the editor of it, and they've been sued dozens and dozens of times. They have over the years. You're quite right. They've done some outstanding journalism. I'd agree with you.
Absolutely brilliant, mate. Absolutely. And they give an award every year. I mean, Paul Foote, who was one of the founders there, was he exposed the whole Lockerbie thing and mysteriously died in Stansted Airport when he was leaving with his kids. But anyway, they have in his memory, they do the footy, the Paul Foote Award for this bit of journalism of the year, and things like that. You know, it's just where the real journos go these days. You can't get into the mainstream, so they. And it's packed with names. No, they name names, but they have to be really, really careful because they've been sued a lot of times.
They have over the years, yeah.
They win the occasional one. Biggest one was against Lord Ashcroft a few years ago. Sued him for tax avoidance.
That's right, yeah. They'd done a story, that's right, and he sued them. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, no, they won.
Nobody has been sued anyway. More than Ian Hislop in UK journalism. You're absolutely right. Hislop has got a record, I think, for being sued by various members of the establishment.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's not just him. It's the whole team, mate.
Yeah.
The whole Private Eye team. It amazes me. It's, what, £2 a fortnight now? £2 a fortnight, I get mine on subscription, so it's a lot cheaper.
Is that right? So, so it's a fortnight. So I thought it was weekly. So it's bi-weekly, and it's only £2. That's not bad.
They've always put it out for the price of a newspaper. And that, I mean, I live in central Portugal these days, and I don't know. A paper in the UK must be about £2 now, is it?
Yeah. If you get a broadsheet these days, you could pay £2.50 a day for a broadsheet.
It's been going for, well, I've been reading it for 50 years since I was 16. So, I'm 17 now. I'm 67 now. As I say, I'm a few weeks older than David. And when I left school at 16, I went to work in the media, wholesale news.
Right.
So I got all the media there, and it's fantastic, fantastic. I've always just really loved it. They can't cover some things, but you know, things like important stuff like paedophilia, MMR vaccines, and good stuff. And they even do a podcast. I'll tell you what, this week's podcast, number 30, I think it was all about the Ted Heath investigation.
No way. Is that right?
A half-hour podcast. But, yeah, they got in touch with Private Eye. They wanted all the people who subscribed to it in...
Jerry, tell me this. What conclusion did they arrive at in their podcast when they spoke about Ted Heath? What did they conclude? Because all the evidence shows clearly that Ted Heath was a paedophile. Clearly, because... Even
absolutely.
The Wiltshire Police, Mike Veal and his team at the Wiltshire Police, they said if Heath was alive, he'd be arrested and charged, because the evidence is huge.
No, somebody, a whistleblower, I think it was Hertfordshire or Herefordshire, they wanted all the people who subscribed to it, to Private Eye, from there, because a police whistleblower had said something about it. And, of course, they protested and said, no, we don't give any real private in. But it's worth listening to. The podcast, 30 minutes.
I'll definitely be checking that one out.
Have a good look at it, mate. Have a good look at Private Eye.
Well, listen, do you think now, Jerry, do you think that Private Eye might send me a couple of hundred quid for that four-minute advertisement for Private Eye? Do you think I'll get anything out of it?
No.
I deserve it now.
I'll get on to what I really wanted to find you about. Well, there's a couple of things. One is, I don't know if you ever know this, but I've been listening to your programme since day one, and you've had a few people on who've talked about HARP. Now, HARP, I looked into it a long time ago, 5-6 years ago, and noticed that there was an ocean-going HARP vessel, and it's escorted around the world.
Hang on a second. So it's the HARP. Now, just for our listeners, in case our listeners don't know, HARP is a series of antennae that point up at the sky, and they blast... they basically blast radio frequencies into the ionosphere, right? At least I think I've got it right there.
Yes.
And there's a few of these on land around the world, but you reckon there's a mobile one that's at sea?
Oh, absolutely. If they've taken the HARP site down now, but it's reopened again, but the actual HARP site is down. But when they had the official HARP site up, there was a whole thing of pictures of a HARP. It was like a... It's massive. It's like a mobile oil platform.
Wow. Well, it would have to be big, yeah. Sorry, Jerry. It would have to be big. While you're talking, I'm going to try and tweet a picture out there for people so they can see it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I hunted around for it the other day and I found it. But you've got to go to Ocean Going Harp or something like that. You'll find it. And when you find it, there's loads and loads of pictures. But it just happened to be not far away from Chile.
Is
Haiti,
that right?
New Zealand or Japan when they had the
tsunamis, earthquakes.
Yeah.
How interesting. Yeah,
exactly. In fact, the sailors on the SS Ronald Reagan, which is an aircraft carrier that escorts HARP, all sued the American government because they all got, or not all, but some got traces of cancer from being close to Fukushima when it went off. You know?
Yeah.
And I've never heard any of the other researchers saying anything about this. And
the Japanese government has gone to extraordinary measures to bury the truth about Fukushima.
Oh, absolutely. It's still pouring out of there.
Priority number one for Japan. Pouring. Yeah, of course it is. Every day, thousands and thousands of gallons of radioactive water pouring out of those reactors into the sea. It's unbelievable. And what a disaster that was. And, you know, I'm not convinced it was natural. I hear what you're saying and I agree with you. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. But anyway... Question, I've only got one more thing to ask. I could talk to you all day, you know, but I think it was, I got a Kindle for my 65th birthday from my sister, and so I've been looking at a lot of books, but before I got the Kindle, I've read a Neil Sanders book.
Oh, yeah, Neil.
It was about my mind control, yeah, because there's a lot of things happened to me in my life that are very, very strange. And in the last 5 or 6 years, I've been thinking, oh, I wonder if they've got something on me, you know, because it's very, very strange. Anyway, so I started reading a lot of mind control books, really. And I came across one called Weird Scenes from the Canyon by David McGowan. David McGowan's done it. He's a Californian who wrote good books. He's dead now, unfortunately. But he wrote did a really good deconstruction of the Boston bombing, and died a year later. But anyway, he wrote Weird Scenes from the Canyon. It was all about Laurel Canyon. Now, I went to Laurel Canyon in 1973. In fact, I went to San Francisco first to the High Ashbury to see, because I've always fancied myself as an old hippie.
Right.
Hello?
I'm there. I'm listening to you. Yeah, go ahead.
And so in High Ashbury, it was all over. It was souvenirs and things. Yeah, we're High Ashbury. We're, but it wasn't where the hippies were born. And I found out that it was Laurel Canyon down in LA, in the LA mountains, the LA hills. So anyway, it's a really weird thing, this. I went down there. I know I went down there because I was in an English sport. TR5, Triumph TR5, which is a really nice sports car with English plates on it. I'd shipped it from Tilbury to Montreal and driven across Canada, and I was living in Vancouver. And I went down the Pacific Coast Highway to San Francisco, but then I headed on to Laurel Canyon. I don't remember anything about it. I've got a few photographs.
But you don't remember the time you spent in Laurel Canyon. You don't remember being there.
No, I remember different scenes in Laurel Canyon, but not really. And I'll tell you what, there's an RAF base there, yeah? But it's not with runways, it's an intelligence. I've only found this out subsequently. They do film studios there. And it's up at the top of the mountain. It's where everyone from Anderson, all the pop stars that didn't go to Vietnam, I always used to wonder why they didn't go to Vietnam. All the 60s icons. Yeah, they all went to Laurel Canyon. There was now a massive, massive group of everyone you can imagine. They all had military parents. They weren't much good at
and this book, you reckon? I'm going to move on, Jerry, because I'm getting lots of calls screaming. I've given you loads of time. What's the name of this book about Laurel Canyon? Because I'm fascinated by it now. The one you just mentioned.
I recommend you read it, or certainly have a look at it online. It's called Weird Scenes from the Canyon.
That sounds really interesting.
David McGowan,
and he's still around, David McGowan, so that's an interesting.
No,
yeah.
No, he died. Oh, 2 years ago.
Oh, did he?
Maria Heller, who I listened to.
Of course, Dave McGowan. Jesus wept. Dave McGowan, of course, Dave died. I know Dave, yeah. Yeah, Dave McGowan, yeah.
He was a good friend of his.
He used to do regular shows with Maria. I heard him on Maria's show many times. That's right, Dave McGowan, yeah. It's been a long day.
I've got to tell you, the last interview you did with Maria a couple of weeks ago was brilliant.
Yeah, when she started talking about New York and the mafia, it was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
Oh, so glad you extended it, mate.
Yeah.
Because I'm that age, you know, I'm her age. I remember those times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fantastic show.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jerry. Jerry, I'll tell you what, I'm going to move on because I'm getting lots of calls and I'm running out of time rapidly. Yeah. Can I thank you for coming on, first of all, and listen, have a great Christmas in Portugal there. Look, you're lucky
I'll
so-and-so.
Tell you something, mate. I'm a raspberry. I've spent 9 months of this year in hospital. I've had 6 centimetres cut off my femur, and I can't walk, mate. I've got a walking frame, and I'm struggling around in my... my self-sufficient little donkey house in the mountains.
So you're glad to see the back of 2019 then, by the sounds of it. It's not been a great year for you.
It was the winter solstice. the winter solstice, that I woke up in the morning and my problem started last year. So hopefully, it's all over.
It's over and better things in 2020.
Thanks for giving me your time, mate.
Not at all, Jerry. No, I really enjoyed it. I could talk to you all day long, and I'm not patronising. I could be on the phone with you for an hour, and I'd love it. But I'm getting calls now. People are screaming at me. Richie, let me on.
I know.
So I better do that.
Love you, and I hope you and Caroline have a brilliant...
Yeah, I'm right back at you, Jerry, mate. You too as well. Thanks so much for the call today. That was Jerry there in Portugal. Lovely to have him on the programme. Lots of calls coming in, but what I'm going to do, because I need to grab some water... I'm a bit dry here, and I did say I'd play one or two Christmas songs as we go on. I know which order the calls are coming in as well, so I'm just going to play about 2 minutes of a song. All right, Mariah the Diva Carey on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Back in a minute. Right, Mariah Carey there, cutting it a bit shorter than I ordinarily would. It's 8 minutes past the hour, the Richie Allen Radio Show, the last one of 2019. It's 0161818 2018 if you're in the UK, but you can Skype for free, chat with Richie, caller. Welcome to the programme. Who have I got? Who am I speaking with?
Hi, it's Mark Best from Rugeley in Staffordshire.
Mark, how are you doing? I know you from Twitter too.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great, mate. Thanks. Yeah, I know you from Twitter. I see your tweets there from time to time. Merry Christmas, Mark.
Merry Christmas to you.
Good to have you on, my friend. We don't have to talk about Christmas. You have the floor, so you can change direction or throw something into the mix. What would you like to talk about?
Thanks. I was just listening to your previous caller, and it's about Private Eye magazine, which I've been reading on and off since I was about 14, which is about 43 years ago. And to suggest, it's done some great work in the past. I mean, it was anti-establishment enough to be banned from W.H. Smith, etc.
Yeah.
But in recent years, it's very much moved into the mainstream. And you asked about how it dealt with the Ted Heath stuff. It's been very dismissive of that whole, you know, that area of research into paedophilia.
Has it now, Mark? How because I couldn't argue with Jerry, of course, because I don't read Private Eye.
Right, well, you're wise not to.
Right, okay.
And the other thing about it, because obviously, yeah, it used to be left of field, and it still does, there is good stuff in there, but Ian Hislop is clearly not an anti-establishment figure. You know, so it's not like, it's not cutting edge as it might have been when Peter Cook and co founded it in 1965 or whatever it was. That's all. It just slightly annoyed me for it to, you know, to be bigged up as the thing it once was when it clearly no longer is.
So how good, like, I mean, you said that back in the day it had certain parts of the establishment on the run. What you believe at that time, Mark, that it was really independent and it was no holds barred at that time?
Well, I mean, it was as you discussed previously, it was constantly being sued, and it was on a knife edge. And I think Peter Cook's money kept it afloat. It was a danger to the establishment. But even then, you know, Peter Cook, you know, he isn't a working class hero, is he? So it was never really, you know, the cutting edge sword of the proletariat, but by any stretch of the imagination. But it used to be sufficiently dangerous to them that they didn't want it widely available, and it was constantly sued. And also the fact that Ian Hislop has been there for so long now. I mean, the whole point about him when he took over from the previous editor, who was, I've forgotten his name now, Richard Ingrams, he said, oh, I'm about 50-odd now, I better give it, hand it down to a younger man. It seems his lot's going to stay there till he's 90.
Yeah. Until he shuffles off the mortal coil, as it were. Yeah, I mean, I find him very smug when I see him on Have I Got News For You. I don't find anything revolutionary about his approach, really.
But as I say, there is stuff in there about, you know, about financial shenanigans in big business and stuff, which is good journalism. Yeah. But overall, it is just it's not a dangerous thing.
Now, to give Jerry, just for me to be the devil's advocate for Jerry. Jerry said that they were all over what was going on at Carillion before anybody else was. In fact, to be fair about Carillion, the mainstream media only reported that Carillion was being given contracts after it had issued a warning to its shareholders, a share price warning.
Right.
Which is bad enough. But we done a bit of digging ourselves, and I had some great guests on the programme. We've done a bit of digging and found out that George Osborne was very much involved in giving contracts to Carillion. But Osborne was also telling a hedge fund, he was definitely telling them to short sell Carillion. I mean, you couldn't get any more filthy than that. And and Jerry reckoned that Private Eye was telling the full story on that.
Yeah, I know, totally. I'll give them. I vaguely remember reading that. Yeah, they definitely do. They are super hot, or certain of their journalists are super hot in various areas. But in terms of the way they deal with the paedophile stuff and the way they cover the antics of the Zionists, they are very mainstream. So yeah, I mean, there is good stuff in there, like the Daily Mail, as you comment. The Daily Mail often has really good stuff, also has absolutely vile stuff.
Yeah.
But
do you know what, Mark? Thanks so much for mentioning the Daily Mail today. I mean, it's generally, I mean, over the years, me being a bit of a lefty, as it were, I wouldn't have had a lot of time for it. But I was never, you know, I was never stubborn. I read everything, regardless of whether I like it or not. But let's give the Mail, let's give them the award for the story of the year for going after the OPCW burying the full story on the so-called chemical attack in Douma in 2018.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter Hitchens there, he should get the Pulitzer for that. It's fantastic stuff, you know. And yet, on the other hand, then, you know, the Mail was disgusting in its attacks on Jeremy Corbyn, whom, even though I'm not the biggest fan of Jeremy as a personality, I know that he's not some disgusting racist who hates Jews. I know he's not. But the Daily Mail, you know, went out of their way to paint him as that, which is maddeningly infuriating. Because on the other hand, they do good journalism. Sorry, Mark, I cut across you there. Go ahead.
They do. No, that's it, really. I mean, I just didn't want people to think that the Private Eye is totally good, because it isn't. You know, it's flawed, like most institutions are. But that was it, really. And also, just to thank you for another great year of shows.
Oh, well, thank you, Mark. I mean that, mate. If it wasn't, it's going to sound so sickeningly fawning and rubbish, but I'm not like that. If it wasn't for people like you phoning in, participating on Twitter, supporting it, well, it wouldn't be here, would it? It's as simple as that. I think it's a little community, this.
It's great, and it means a great deal to me. So, cheers, and wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas.
Right back at you, Mark, mate. Thanks for calling in today. Loved hearing from you. Bye for now, Mark. Yeah, Mark was giving a different take on Private Eye there. Jerry, we heard two sides of there. Jerry said, look, it's a very good publication. It's still doing very good journalism. And Mark said, well, not as good as it used to be, and it's not as establishment threatening as maybe it once was back in the days of Peter Cook, of course. 16 minutes past the hour. Yeah, I'll keep going with these calls for about, what are we now? I'm going to go till about 7. Don't panic. But there's a few things I want to say towards the end. Nothing mushy or any of that nonsense, but I just want to say a couple of things at the end. So we'll go for another half an hour, I reckon. Faisal said to me earlier on, I want on, and Faisal's a long-time contributor, pops in every now and then when we do these phone-ins, so glad to have him back on the programme. There is time for you to get on. There was somebody trying to get through on a mobile phone number, and their mobile phone number ended 028. If you give me a ring after Faisal, for some bloody reason I can't ring out. We've had a lot of glitches in the Matrix here in the last few weeks. You'll know this. I didn't miss any radio shows. It was great. But I've had a lot of software issues and telco issues. It's not a money issue at all. It certainly is not a money issue. But I just can't phone out. I tried to phone that person back a few minutes ago and I couldn't do it. It wouldn't let me make the phone. Now, that could be because the person I was trying to ring, they might have their phone set to not take calls or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, we'll figure it out. Faisal, Merry Christmas.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, mate. I can hear you loud and clear.
I was just not sure my microphone was in the right one.
Yeah, you've got a decent mic. You've got a decent mic, as we say in Ireland. A decent mic. We don't say decent, we say decent. It's a decent mic.
Cheers.
Looking forward to a few days. Are you off for a few days? How does it work for you? Are you happy with Christmas?
Oh, no, I just kind of hibernate at my mum's place for Christmas and just have a few brandy and coffees, a bit of a...
Marvellous.
Turkey curry and
turkey curry. It's so bloody British, turkey curry, isn't it? We don't do that in Ireland. Irish people will tell you, Faisal, that the St. Stephen's Day dinner, that's Boxing Day, but it's St. Stephen's Day in Ireland, is better than Christmas Day, because we basically have the same day dinner again on St. Stephen's Day, because the turkey is so big. We have these 80-pound turkeys, right? So basically, the following day, you have the same again. But that cooked turkey that's been left there for a day, it's nicer on St. Stephen's Day.
Okay, yeah.
It tastes
nicer. I can see that.
Or it could be that we didn't pig out as much before the dinner on St. Stephen's Day as we did on Christmas Day. That could be it too. I have no idea. So you're hibernating at the mum's and being a mad year. Hey, listen, while you're on...
Let me...
I've got to put this to you now. Do you remember... Two young women were viciously assaulted on a bus in London. A lesbian couple, minding their own business. It was all over the news a few months ago.
Yeah, just coming back to me now.
You don't have to remember the details. No, people will vaguely remember the story. A group of boys, young boys, 15, 16-year-old boys, scumbags, harassed this young couple and asked them to kiss one another and all this nonsense. And then beat the shite out of them, basically, these two girls. There's a horrible photograph which was taken by one of the scumbags of the two girls with blood all over their faces. Well, anyway, quite rightly, the little bastards who did it are off to prison. Well, youth offenders institutions, good luck. No problem with that. Here's an interesting one, Faisal. After the sentence is completed, I find this very spooky, and maybe our gay listeners, they might argue with me, they have to attend, wait for it, diversity lessons. And that's a bit like re-education centres, isn't it? That worries me.
That's kind of weird. I mean, it assumes that it was, the attack was, had an ideological basis, which needs to be countered. And, you know, as if they didn't know what they were doing was wrong, which I really... I'm very sceptical about that anybody would really do that, thinking no, this is somehow the right thing to do, or it was ideologically based. I know there's people against homosexuality and so on and so forth, but they're not the kind of people that would do this. I mean, if they are against it, they're against it because they believe it's a bad thing, but of course kicking the crap out of somebody is even worse. So I mean, it's a completely irrelevant thing.
You've just hit upon the rub, as it were. That's the rub. You see, the scumbags asked them to kiss one another, and they asked them, how do you have sex, looking for a cheap thrill. And then when they didn't get their way, they assaulted them. Absolute dirty little scummy. I'm not going to swear again now. Peter Tatchell said to me on the radio show about 6 or 8 months ago, and I had a proper go at him for saying it. He said it's not okay to think that there's something wrong with being gay. Now, you and me, we don't care about people's sexuality. We don't care if people are with same-sex couples or not. We don't give a damn.
Well, I think it's a moral issue that's personal, that's not really anybody else's business, because they're not doing any harm.
Exactly.
Whatever you believe, I mean, I'm sort of in two minds in terms of the moral issue, but it's certainly nothing which has anything to do with what I think somebody else should do. That is up to them.
Yeah, well, you see, my big concern here is, and again, you hit the nail on the head a couple of minutes ago, when does it become mandatory that somebody who says, it might be a conservative Christian whom I don't agree with, like the Christians we had on the other day, the excellent Eric Gizhevsky and the priest who came on with him, Father Paul, of course, Father Paul Kramer. When does somebody say to them, we can't tolerate any longer your contempt for gay people or your disliking of gay people. So you've got to go for diversity lessons. When does that happen? Because it can't be too far down the road, that. Seriously.
Yeah, I don't know if that's ever really going to have any traction have any serious effect, because I think really it's very obvious, even if somebody is thinking about this maybe being the right thing to do, it really takes a short word to say, look, these youths just beat up somebody who was minding their own business on a bus. It kind of doesn't matter why. There is obviously something very wrong with them to do that.
Of course.
And diversity lessons are not going to address their problem. They're not going to do a damn thing. They need a much more serious therapy than that, and a much more serious look into their background.
Well said, well said. Because
if you
for
really
me,
want to do something more than punishing them, if you're really looking at rehabilitating them. And I think anybody would get that.
Well, do you know what, Faisal? For me, it's a massive stretch to be told that they beat up the two women because the two women were gay. That's a huge stretch for me. That's a massive leap.
I think that was just an excuse. That was something that just stuck out. But they were obviously looking for somebody to beat up. I mean, let's face it.
But then on saying that, there might be a gay man or a gay woman listening to the programme now, and he might say, oh, Richie, you're a rotten bastard. You know, gay people still do get targeted just because they're gay. It still does happen. I mean, it's not like it was back in the 70s and 80s. But I just thought, and then you can, well, shut up about this and you can tell me why you came on. I know you've got something you want to bring up, but I don't agree with you. I think it won't be too long now before people who are heard making critical comments, whether it be about minorities or other religions or sexuality, it won't be too long before somebody says we need to legislate for that and get them to diversity lessons. That's the only minor disagreement I would have with you. I do see that in the very near future. But anyway,
It's possible that
I could be wrong too.
It could go that far, but that still doesn't mean, even if they legislate for it, will it really have much effect or much traction? I think there's already quite a lot of fight back against that kind of thinking.
Yeah. Good fight. Oh, yeah, I hope you're right, mate, to be honest.
And there are so many ways you can counter it and make it look silly. That it's in the end whether politicians think it's gonna be a massive disadvantage to them in terms of voters and credibility, and I think the time is coming where it's going to be too big a risk for them to be pushing this for many politicians to be pushing this too much. Of course, there are some that are just on some kind who are paid to do this, who are from some sort of George Soros school or whatever have been inserted in there into the Labour Party or whatever. But I don't think it's going to be the majority. I think the majority of MPs are going to be looking to try and get voted in again and keep some kind of credibility. So you have a point, but I think the other side might
be a few years. No, you're right. That. You're right. It might be a few years off because it's less likely to come in with a conservative majority government. It's less likely, particularly with Boris Bourke as our letterbox, as Johnson as the Prime Minister. It's less likely.
Talking of that, I think a lot of that was used to keep Labour down, as in to make people scared to vote Labour because then this stuff would come in. And I don't think it was really scary in that sense at all. I think that the threat of what Labour would bring in those sort of terms was overblown, because I think I don't think it was the majority of Labour MPs even. And even if they did start threatening to bring this stuff in, I think there'd be a lot of kickback and a lot of protests, and I don't think it would work in the end. So I think it was the wrong reason not to vote Labour.
Yeah. Very interesting that, Faisal. Again, I'm not saying I would disagree with you, but I wouldn't be as optimistic. I'll tell you why. Because as much as you do, I think, I do spend a lot of time looking at some of the stuff coming out of groups like Momentum, not just Momentum, but other groups.
Yeah.
A lot of the young people joining the Lib Dems and the Greens, they favour this lunatic asylum. They favour it. Where everything.
I'm not so sure about that either, if it's really that many young people. I mean, when that surge of following came for Corbyn to then push him up as leader, he was against things like the EU. He was a Eurosceptic. He was very much for Palestinians and very vocal about it. And there was and he didn't really speak anything about this kind of progressive agenda when it comes to sexuality. So then suddenly, the mob that were behind him were characterized by these progressive kind of missions. And I thought, well, did they just suddenly change overnight? Did these people suddenly become pro-EU and whatever? I don't think so. I think there was a lot of lying going on from the media again, which, I mean, is not going to be any surprise to anyone.
No, mate, not at all. Now, there was something specifically you wanted to get into. I've got one or two standing boys. We've got 5 or 6 minutes, Michael. Over to you, my friend.
Right, there was just something quickly about that I just don't hear talked about enough, really, on the internet. One of them, of course, this year has been characterized by a lot of people being deplatformed, and yeah, most of that deplatforming or the more serious side of it starts really with PayPal not working for them. That's when it gets serious, when they get chopped off of PayPal.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, the only reason why that is serious is because it's a monopoly. And it's actually quite a mystery why it's a monopoly, because it's relatively easy money. It's not like they have to do much. People want to, you know, internet commerce is a massive side of the economy, and unless you want to give your details to every website you buy something from, your bank details, the common sense thing to do is to give it once to an organization like PayPal and then pay for everything with that. So it isn't some niche service. It is a major service, and it is a monopoly. So how can they kind of act like some little private business and just choose to deny somebody service? It is an important global financial institution that has a complete monopoly on this.
Yeah, it does indeed. And we've seen it so many times in the last year to 18 months where people who haven't broken any law, it must be said.
Yeah.
When Tommy Robinson was shut down from PayPal, I'm not looking for any credit here, but I was one of the first ones to say it's a disgrace.
Absolutely, and I hate Tommy Robinson.
Yeah, he's a scumbag, absolutely. But you have to stand up for his right not to be kicked off PayPal for no good reason. It's rotten. And you're right, you make a great point. It has a monopoly. It has a hegemony. How did that happen? Why was it allowed to happen? And you know the methodology by which PayPal works? They've not patented or patented that. Somebody else could do that. So why aren't they?
I've looked into it a bit, but I mean, I'm just some, you know, burnt out old 90s street musician sort of looking into this. I'm not exactly
an
expert.
What you're doing when it comes to using your computer.
And it's a mystery how nobody gets in on the game.
Yeah,
that is a complete. What is happening to people who have the idea? I know. Let's do the same as PayPal. It seems like low overheads and high profit. Like, I don't think they, as far as I know, you can correct me on this, but let's say if I were to send you a donation, I don't think they even take a cut of that, do they?
They do. They do. They are a shower of bastards. They take 5% of everything. Everything.
It's kind of transfer.
Yeah, if somebody sends me a quid, they take 5% of it all the time.
Okay. And but that's not even that much, actually.
Jesus Christ, it adds up. Well, you know, when you're an operation like this, which is not massive, for somebody like me, it is a lot over a 12-month period. It's a lot of money. If you're bringing in massive amounts of money as an independent content creator, well, then you wouldn't give a damn. But no, 5% is. It's shocking. Yeah, it drives me bananas, to be honest.
I'm thinking more from the point of view that there's other financial institutions that do maybe some kind of similar administration of money and would charge more.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, comparative to other services, I'd say it is low compared to that. And so it would be easy for somebody else to come in and charge maybe a little bit more. And because of the way PayPal are behaving, of course, it would mean that they would have ready customers, people who can't, for whatever reason, use PayPal. And so they'd gladly gladly maybe pay a bit more, a couple more percent, just so they could carry on business. And so the gap in the market is there. The financial incentive is there for anybody who's got anybody, any ability with this, which is anybody who's ever, all those different startup companies that start up Bitcoin stuff, which is a complicated niche thing, which is already a crowded market. And yet people come into this all the time, spend a lot of money, have a lot of IT resources to get into the Bitcoin or just cryptocurrency market with startups. But nobody is going into the fiat currency market when there is such a huge gap in the market and lack of competition. And that is a huge mystery.
It's a massive mystery. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's alone. It stands alone doing what it does with no competition. Nobody has thought to take it on. Yeah, the deplatforming thing in general, Faisal. Google decided to deplatform trigger warning. For what? Like, you know, again, you got two lads there, left-leaning lads. They might not like to be described as that, but they are. And there's nothing, you know, that you could say is... I don't go in for this hateful nonsense. For me, as a broadcaster who's worked in professional broadcasting for most of my working life, the standard has always been harmful. Like Ofcom and the broadcasting regulator in Ireland, which is obviously a different one, they're ultimately concerned with harm. Can it be shown that a broadcast has content that could be harmful? And they give you a load of different ways where it could be argued that it's harmful. Forget hate speech and all that nonsense. There's nothing that the lads are doing that should warrant Google saying, right, you're demonetized, full stop. But they have done. I tried to send them a couple of quid over Super Chat for Christmas last week, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't believe it. It's just disgraceful. So now they've got a PayPal, so I was able to use the PayPal to do it. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, unbelievable, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is tantamount to almost a breakdown of law and order in the financial world, that something as big as PayPal and as key to business as PayPal can just do something like that arbitrarily without any kind of proceeding whatsoever.
Well said, on the word of somebody at random who contacts them to say, oh, this person is a bit of a neo-Nazi. Again, you just hit
and
hit
without us. An absolute uproar that there has to be alternatives. If they can even be allowed to behave like this, then the monopoly has to end. I mean, that should be raised in Parliament just on principle.
20 years ago, there would have been a massive tort. There would have been a huge class action 20 years ago. But of course, successive US governments, particularly successive US governments, have kind of heralded in or ushered in kind of tort reform in America. So class action lawsuits are far more difficult now to put together than they used to be. PayPal would have been wide open 20 years ago for billions of dollars in fines, in punitive damages awarded by a judge.
Well, it still is, and you kind of wonder how they have this attitude that what makes them think that they're safe from this, because they really could be sued to smithereens.
Yeah.
And it's just that they haven't yet, even with the difficulties with class action suits. I mean, it's not that they are still happening, they can still be done. It's just more difficult. And
what they've done with class actions is they've tweaked for years the how do I put it? Say rules and regulations. The requirements, to make it all the more difficult for people who have been harmed or affected by whatever, a drug or whatever, to come together and do that. They've limited them. They've put them caps on payouts as well, and they've screwed around with basically the caps on the payouts. They've capped payouts in most of the US states, so a jury's not even allowed. Like a jury, what they've done is, in some states, the jury is not allowed to know that there is a ceiling. This is amazing, this. So you could be in a jury, me and you in America, and we could see all these people that have been destroyed by a drug. We could be in the jury room. You're the foreman, Faisal. And at the end of it, we all say, you say, right, guys, what do you think? Right, they're guilty. Then we come to the punishment part of it. And you say, well, what do you think? And I say, well, 250 million. And you go, brilliant. And we all go around the table. And eventually we say, they should be fined 700 million pounds. We don't know because it's been kept from us, but it'll be automatically reduced by the trial judge because of laws that came into effect in America about 7 or 8 years ago. In most states, it'll be reduced to 10 million or 15 million or something like that. There won't even be an appeal. It's disgusting.
Well, that's the thing. But again, lawyers do get around that by selecting a state where the laws are the most favourable.
I know, but what's left?
With the class action.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what, mate, that PayPal thing, that's something to get into in the new year.
Absolutely, because I do think there should be more of a loop, both on how they can get away with it in the first place, but also what is stopping the competition. That's the bit which I really
you're bewildered by it. Where are the competitors?
On the internet on that subject, why isn't anybody coming out with this? Why aren't, you know, let's say on Max Kaiser, when somebody comes along about their new cryptocurrency startup company, you know, why haven't you looked into this possibility, this wide open market, which would already just by anybody entering it right now, the first person to enter that is going to have a huge customer base already, just with those people who've been disenfranchised by PayPal.
Faisal, I've got a mobile phone call that I need to take because the guy's been trying to get through since the first 15 minutes of the programme. I want to get him on and then I'm going to wrap. Listen, Merry Christmas, mate. Enjoy the time with your mum.
Thanks for having me on again.
You're very welcome, Faisal. Look after yourself and a Happy New Year to you as well. Faisal there. There is somebody trying to get through on a mobile that I've been trying. I can't ring them back. It's really bugging me, to be honest. I'm going to give him a chance to, or her a chance, to give me a call there. It's coming up for 19 minutes to the top of the hour. It is the 23rd of December 2019. This is the last Richie Allen radio show of the year. Just to give you a heads up again, the programme will return on Sunday, January the 5th. That's Sunday View, January the 5th will be the first show of the new year. We've done around about 300 live shows this year, which is not bad, eh? It's not bad at all, I think. And it's been an interesting year, of course, with the election and the various delays to leaving the European Union, which, of course, I don't believe the country is going to do anyway. It's been a pretty packed old year for the show. Yeah, somebody with a mobile phone number ending 028 was trying to get through to me. I'd ring you back in a heartbeat, but I can't for some reason. And we don't... There's no reason why I can't ring out. I've had a few problems with the software that does that for me in recent weeks, and it's going to be looked at over the Christmas period. So I'm sorry I can't call you back. That's what I would have done in phone-ins previously. When somebody was screaming, trying to get through, and they weren't being answered, I would just phone them back. I'll give them a minute to give me a call back. While I give them a minute to do that, here's John Lennon. A little bit of John Lennon there. Happy Christmas, war is over. Right, John and Yoko, I believe. Happy Christmas. Right, that caller has called back. Thank God for that. Caller, welcome to the programme.
Hello, Richie. This is Julian in London.
Ah, Julian, I'm so glad I got you on. I tried to ring you back and I couldn't.
To get through.
Oh, mate, I'm delighted. No problem. Merry Christmas, Julian, first of all, mate.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you, all the family, the pets, the children and everyone.
Ah, you're a gent, mate. Thanks so much. I'm so glad you got on. I was dreading the thoughts of not getting you on.
I'm glad to get on. And it's very rare that I catch you live. I'm sorry to say I've enjoyed the Richie Allen show over the years through the medium of YouTube, mainly.
Oh, have you? So that answers that question then, because, Richie, don't stop uploading to YouTube. I won't. I will always, so long as the account is there, I will always upload to YouTube. Thanks, Julian.
Yeah, keep it alive. And we've seen so many YouTube channels come and go this year. Yeah. I wonder if you're aware of Morris 108, who sadly passed away.
Yes, through...
You interviewed him.
I did, and I got to know him briefly through Phil Restino in Florida, lovely Phil. And Morris, he was in Cambodia. He did a brilliant show with me one time, and yes. I wanted him to come back on. The only problem was Morris couldn't do it live because of the time difference.
No, I know, time difference. I had a few correspondence with him. I used to drop him a tenner now and then. I appreciate what he was doing, and he was deleted from YouTube, and he tried to come back, and then that was it. He passed away. Another one gone in 2019.
Yeah, and God rest him. I'm not going to say I knew him very well, because I didn't. I knew him through Phil, but I enjoyed what he did. And deleted from YouTube for doing what? Nothing other than talking about things in a way, of course, that, you know, differs from the regular media.
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with what Morris was doing. Very personable guy, very smart guy, and they just deleted him.
Yeah, I agree, and he's part of this community. And the deeper you get into it, you see the same faces crop up here and there, whether it's yourself, David Icke, Syrian girl. I see quite a lot of George Galloway, who came on your show once.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, and he disagrees with David Icke, apparently. But look, we've all got different opinions, and it's great that we can all accept each other if we can. And be part of that broad spectrum of debate.
Absolutely right, Julian. 100%. I think that's a lesson he learned, actually, George Galloway.
Yeah,
I think it's a lesson he learned.
It's all about lessons. Yeah.
You have to stand up for people's right to their opinion, even if you don't agree with it. I remember George did a show some years ago, and he got very rude with a caller who talked about David Icke. And Galloway was very dismissive of him and all this. But I think Galloway eventually... You know, if you see enough of your own friends getting banned and getting deleted, you start to come around. And it's important that we stand up for those who we disagree with as much as those we agree with, Julian.
That's 100%. And we know that the old poem, first they came for the communists, then they came for so-and-so, and then they came for me. We all have to stick together.
100%. Would you be... what do you think? Are you an optimist, Julian? I mean, you know, things are pretty bleak for a lot of people at this particular time. There's a lot going on, a lot of horrible things going on. Does it depress you? Does it give you... Does it motivate you to do something about it? How do you feel about things?
You know what? A week ago, I was in Syria as a tourist.
Where are you now?
Yes.
How did you manage Julian?
With my camera, I've got a little channel as well. I'm a budding Richie Allen, by the way.
Fantastic, Julian.
In 10 years' time, I want to be Richie Allen.
No, you don't. You'll be yourself, and you'll be better again. You'll be all the better for it. So tell me, how did you get into Syria?
So I flew to Beirut. I got in touch with a travel agency in Damascus called Marotta Tours that you can find online quite easily. Did my research, saw some good reviews. I applied for the visa, all sort of very lastminute.com. I had a friend who was thinking about coming with me, but he couldn't get the time off work. So I did it on my own. I've been to Beirut before. I spent a couple of nights in prison in Beirut.
How?
Under a mistaken identity. A friend and I were giving boxing training lessons to kids in a Palestinian refugee camp in Beirut. 5 years ago, and we got picked up at a checkpoint, and they just didn't like our story, and they bundled us away for two nights.
And did they treat you properly, Julian?
Back in Beirut, you know, I love the place. And from there, I went to Damascus and had a week in Syria, saw Tartus, saw Homs, saw Malula, the town that was the Christian town that was taken over by ISIS and is now free again. I saw a lot in a week.
Oh, that's amazing.
And you talk about depression, the people there were optimistic. And whether they were Christian or Muslim, they all had the Christmas tree up and decorations. They accept each other's religions without really questioning who's who, you know?
And the media...
That's what I saw.
That's what you saw. Because the UK media will tell anybody who listens that it's a horrible, oppressive, authoritarian regime where he kills anybody who dissents against him. But that's just not true, is it, Julian?
It's not true. And I don't want to say it's perfect. Like, the truth always lies somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And I've, as you say, I've lived through the British propaganda and he's an evil man, this and that. So I went to find out the truth. And the truth is somewhere in the middle. I'm not saying Syria is perfect. But if you want to find an integrated society where people are secular but not atheistic, they're all religious, but they have that spirituality that so many places are void of. And I teach in schools in and around London, and people are thinking that I can't say Merry Christmas, or the PC agenda, etc. But in Syria, in the heart of the Muslim world, in the Middle East, Muslims and Christians are wishing each other Merry Christmas, and it's very normal, and everyone's very happy about it.
My brief experience of that part of the world was just spending a little bit of time in Morocco, and it's not even that part of the world, because of course Morocco is Africa. But we travel in Fez, we travel in Tangiers. I've never in my life seen anything like it. When we went to Fez, to see the people there, to see the community, how people look out for one another, the patriarchy, the matriarchy, the elders are looked after, they're elevated, people listen to them. Everybody has a function, everybody is respected and respectful, and they'll give you half of what they have, Julian. They'll give you half of what they have. They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, these people. The poor people, not that they're not completely poor, but simple people, they have something that money can't buy.
Yeah. I'm amazed to be talking to you today. So Syria for a week, and that was your...
Yeah, for a week.
You said you'd been in Beirut before. Hey, listen, when you were in prison in Beirut, did they treat you properly?
Well, do you know what? There were three of us. Myself, travelling on my Irish passport. I'm Irish background, so when I go to the Middle East, I use the Irish passport.
Right.
Which might get you better treatment than a British passport, I thought.
Maybe.
The other friend on a British passport who is from Uzbekistan originally, and a Palestinian from the camp, a chap called Abu Ali, who was sort of looking after us in the camp as a host. And we could see the racism of the Lebanese towards the Palestinians, who, although they've been there two or maybe three generations, have never been assimilated, have never received full citizenship and go around with documents and work permits rather than a full integrated citizenship. But there was a little bit of discrimination against him. We could see that. And they sort of intimidated us, blindfolded us. But there was nothing too physical. And there was a threat. There were a couple of bombings that week. So I can understand why a British guy and an Irish guy and a Palestinian guy driving around in the middle of the night could be suspicious.
They were a bit edgy with the bombings and that.
They were on edge.
Tell me this, Julian. You said to me a couple of minutes ago the Syrian people are optimistic. Yeah. They're optimistic that this is going to end real soon. They think that the jihadists are going to be driven out of the country, and they think things will go back to normal, do they?
Yeah. Look, things are on the up. Tourists are coming back. They were telling me that they had many, many... We used to have so many tourists. We would be sitting in a cafe, and the good friend, the guide, Khuldun, lovely guy that looked after me, said, 7 years ago, this place would have been packed full. But it's busier than last year.
Wow, that's
and
crazy.
Next year is going to be even busier. So there's this sort of feeling of we're on the cusp.
I hope we've not lost Julian.
The worst is over with. We're coming out of the woods now, you know?
They think they're coming out of the woods.
There is optimism in the air.
That's lovely, Julian. Wow, mate. And so you plan on using your camera, and you're very, very articulate, obviously. So you're going to do more of this then. You're going to do more of your own journalism.
And, without being too emotional, Richie, this is the first Christmas without my dad. And I'm using the camera my dad gave me. My dad put a camera in my hand when I was about 5 years old. We were always into filming things and taking photos. I've been very lucky to have that. And we're from the generation where, there's going to be so many memories all caught on videotape. And I'm just trying to upload what I can to YouTube. Hopefully it's there forever. If the channel gets pulled down, it gets pulled down if I say the wrong thing.
Do me a favour. Come back on with me anytime you want. So when you've got something juicy, when you've got a bit of info and you've done and you've put up a YouTube video and you want an interview, you come here first. Do you hear me, Julian? Give me a shout.
Monday is at 5 o'clock, the regular slot. Is that how I catch you live?
Yeah, I'm live Monday to Thursday at 5 for 2 hours and then Sunday mornings. But you look, I could even, if it didn't suit you, it doesn't have to be live. We can do a pre-record earlier in the day. It's no big deal.
I would love to. And my channel, if you don't mind me mentioning
it. I was going to ask you. That was my next question. Yeah, go ahead.
It's called Lessons for Life, and the 4 is a number 4. And it's just about learning those lessons. As you said, Galloway maybe went in a different direction. As long as we're all moving forward, we'll learn some lessons for life. And
too right. Now, if you're on Twitter, tweet me a link to the channel. I mean, I'll get a link anyway, and I'll retweet it. Lessons for life. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
On Twitter, it's at Lessons for Life 247. 24/7 at the end there.
At Lessons for Life 247. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not big on Twitter. It's not really a language I speak yet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get to grips with YouTube. But it's like, it's funny how the internet became YouTube. And I'm telling you, I listen to you only on YouTube. And YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, they've got this monopoly. You were talking about monopoly earlier on. It would probably be good if we could find a way to step out of that.
Yeah, they're so big. They're like states. They're like continents now, aren't they? These things. That's how big they are. Faisal was talking about that.
I've taken the camera to Syria. I've also been to Iran. I like going to these countries that are outside the loop.
Yeah,
you know that.
How did you find Iran? Sorry, the only reason I'm butting in there now is I'm running out of time. How did you find Iran?
That's right. Long story short, Iran was amazing. It was another place I couldn't have entered without an Irish passport. British citizens need a tourist guide if they want to go to Iran, and they need a special clearance. The Irish passport enabled me to stand in Tehran on the street where the British embassy used to be, on Winston Churchill Street. The name was changed to Bobby Sands Street.
Wow.
And I was kind of happy about that.
I didn't know that. That's, do you know what, man?
Yeah, that's the street in Tehran. Bobby Sands Street. They spell it B-A-B-I-S-A-N-Z.
Is that how they spell it? Wow.
Bobby Sands Street.
You bowled me over there now, huh? Wow. I tell you what, that's Julian, mate, what a tonic. Thanks for calling in. Stay in touch, mate. Please stay in touch
with me. Thank you, Richard. I really appreciate it.
Not at all.
I'm really glad I got through to you.
Well, I'm honoured. You made the show now. So thanks so much for doing it, mate.
Thank you.
Speak again.
Take care, Richard.
Happy Christmas, Julian.
Thank you.
Slán go fóill. Bye for now. Bye. Isn't that lovely there, Julian? Right, look, that's it now. I'm done, right? I've got to get out. And I'm not going to do a big long-winded thing now. To callers trying to get through, I'm sorry. Took quite a few callers today. Listen, thanks for being with the radio show during the year. To everybody who's supported it, whether it's by sending a few quid, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I want you to listen to me when I say that. It means the world to me. It really does. I can't say that enough times. Okay? Most people who've ever sent me some support have received an email from me. I know that maybe one or two haven't done. Don't hold it against me. Drop me an email and I will chat with you. Just thanks for it. There's no radio show without you. I really appreciate it. It's been a good old year. Over 300 live shows this year. We've had some amazing guests on so many different subjects. It's terrific. And what I wanted to do, if I got it handy, I have. I just wanted to say thanks to one or two people. Just very briefly, I had this. I made a couple of notes, and I think I've lost it now. Have I, or have I not? No, I might have it. So I just wanted to thank one or two people again. If your name isn't mentioned, don't get excited. It's always a kind of a last minute thing with me. Massive thanks to Jean Ann Crowley, of course, a great friend in Ireland, in Cleggan. She might be in Dublin. Simon Stewart, I must give Simon a ring. I've not spoke to Simon for ages in Birmingham, Wolverhampton, in fact. Great guy and very important. Mark Bajerski, of course. Tez Terence, Tez Howell, my pal in Salford. Patricia Braunschweiler, of course, to Ruth. Hayden and Graham, the Trigger Warning lads, of course, triggerwarning.tv. Check it out, they do amazing stuff there. Paul Ripley is one of the greatest guys you could ever meet and ever know at Fab Radio. Amazing man. My pal Michael Cohen, of course, Fallowfield. Michael was with me yesterday having a bit of lunch. Maria Heller, Michael Rivero, Stephen Lendman, of course. Oh, God, there's so many people. To John, to Maggie, to Ryan and Sean in Salford as well. And of course to Caroline Tisserant. Now Caroline, or Caroline Tisserant, is the love of my life, and she tolerates this radio programme, and that's why we have it. She puts up with it, and that's it. That's the last dedication of the evening. Have a wonderful Christmas. Look after yourselves and one another. Chill out for a bit, get a bit of fresh air if you are off, that is. And we'll talk again on Sunday morning, the 5th of January, which is not that far away, really, where Sunday View will come back, hopefully with a bang, for 2019. Going out with this, The Pogues and Kirsty MacColl in Fairy Tale of New York. Merry Christmas. I love you. See you soon.